Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 10, entitled Sanctuary. This episode aired November 28th, 1993. And I believe it to be the last episode of 93, and we finally move on to 94.
Wow. It only seems like yesterday.
Yeah. Well, before we get started on this episode, is there anything you would like to talk about from the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
Sure. Just a reminder that we have shortened our descriptions of the individual scenes. We still will walk through every single scene, but we have decided to abbreviate them a bit so that we will be a little bit more focused on the analysis and a little bit less focused on the detail and every single movement of every single scene.
And we'll adjust that if we feel we're not giving enough detail.
Of course. It's our podcast. We do whatever we want.
Yes.
Okay. Want to get started?
Absolutely.
All right, let's start. In the cold open of this episode, we open in Sisko's office where Sisko is not happy with Kira's job performance. She's been distracted by shouting at the provisional government, drink, about various things. Kira is apologetic, but she's really worried about the future of Bajor. Sisko understands and he doesn't mind all of her side work, but he still needs her to do her job.
Now, do you think Sisko's missing a chance here for some coaching and leadership? To show her how to have a little bit more balance between her two roles?
Yeah, she might need some input on which things are important. Although at the same time, I'm not sure he's qualified to tell her what's important for her planet.
He is the Federation representative there.
Yes, but also he's not really supposed to interfere too much in their government. But I don't think it would have hurt for him to maybe A, ask if he could help with something.
Yeah.
Which is what a good leader would do. Maybe he could help get something out of her way or help give some more ideas about something, whatever it is that she's working on. But yeah, he doesn't really do that. He just basically says, yeah, all that's fine, but just make sure and get your paperwork done.
And it's odd because Sisko, in a previous episode we learned, was helping her with him lunching or dining with Bajoran politicians.
Right.
Obviously to help schmooze and try and get them to do what Kira wants.
But he doesn't say anything.
Yep.
He just shoos her along. And it doesn't take long for her to get distracted again when Quark summons her to the bar. It seems that she's made a deal with him to allow a Bajoran musician named Varani to play in his bar for a month. Quark is not thrilled because people are so enraptured with his docile tones that they aren't gambling or buying drinks.
He does seem to be quite mesmerizing the bar patrons.
Yes, including Morn.
Yes. 1 minute 57, Morn. It appears he is back in his puffer jacket.
He is back in the puffer jacket. And he's also dabbing a tear from his eye because the music is so soulful.
Wow. Hitting Morn right there.
Right. So Kira asks Varani to play something a bit more upbeat next time.
What do you mean? That this cultural music isn't inspiring people to gamble?
Yeah, apparently not. I thought the song sounded like a strange version of the theme song.
It was.
Okay, good. It wasn't just me. When she talks to the musician, we learn that he's also one of her side projects. He's a famous Bajoran who used to play in big concert halls before the occupation. She got him this job, and she's also doing him the favor of asking the government to rebuild one of the destroyed halls. So she is all over the place.
This, I think, is interesting because cultural heritage is very important to a people.
Yeah, but you don't usually start there.
But it's part of a rebuilding process and it can help give focus. And remember, the Bajorans are still heavily divided.
Right, of course. And the goal would be at least have some kind of a roadmap of things that you're going to do instead of just saying, no, we're never going to rebuild that. Well, we should pause here for just a second and talk about the actor playing Varani. His name is William Shellert. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but he has 387 IMDb credits as an actor.
Wow.
He was acting into his 90s. He had guest appearances on all kinds of shows. I think I most remember him from reruns of The Patty Duke Show. There's like some old, really old black and white show that used to play in reruns when I was a kid.
So this is a guy from the dawn of television.
Yeah, for sure. But also, he had several appearances on Gunsmoke, which, of course, was one of the inspirations for this show.
Yeah.
His very first credit was in 1947.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, This makes me wonder if anyone has put together a list of the guest stars and who has the record for the most number of total appearances on television.
I'm sure somebody has, not me.
No, that's more work than I'm prepared to put in.
I hope that in the new Star Trek show, Strange New Worlds, that's going to be more episodic.
Yeah.
I hope they keep up this tradition of bringing in these great actors to fill all of the guest parts. That's really cool.
Oh, that could be great. Well, that has been kind of one of the running things with the Orville. They've had a lot of really serious actors appear in bit parts.
True. So they were, yeah, upholding that tradition.
Yeah.
So I hope they keep doing it.
Yeah.
Well, we head back to Ops, where Kira still hasn't completed her duty roster.
Oh, if you notice, Kira makes a crack about wanting to put Quark out of an airlock.
I did notice that. I didn't write it down, but yes, she did make that crack, which you've been saying for several episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Considering everything he's been responsible for, you think right. Sisko might be tempted to say, Mars is going to make the security system crash for about 30 seconds. We'll see if he can have some kind of accident in that time frame.
You know, we talk about this a lot, that there's no consequences for Quark, no matter what he does.
Yeah.
There must be something positive that he's bringing that they're accepting as outweighing these other sort of scuzzy things that he's doing, to use a word of my mother's.
He is a community leader.
He is. Well, yes. As I said, back to Ops, and a ship comes through the wormhole with four life forms on board. Ominous music plays as the ship is having some kind of structural issue. So you know something is about to happen.
Of course.
They beam four aliens directly into Ops. They're quite pale, with very bumpy skin, and one of them is injured. Did we just beam another virus on board?
Well, they definitely have a skin condition.
It just worries me when we do things like this. I mean, they don't learn from their own mistakes. Is that the problem with episodic television? We don't learn from our mistakes. We don't grow.
Oh, that's funny.
Hey, cue the theme song. Sisko offers the new aliens medical attention and assistance repairing their ship. The aliens appear agitated, and the universal translator cannot untangle what they're saying. Sisko asks Kira to get them to the infirmary and to keep them talking so the computer can figure out their language.
I think she's talking Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah. I mean, they are a shared universe.
That's true. We did establish that. The woman is the one doing most of the talking. When they get to the promenade, Odo appears to help herd them toward the infirmary. The woman appears to be in charge, and they all listen to what she says, and she takes an instant liking to Kira. I was thinking it might just be because they have the same hair color, but actually, her hair is very tall and dramatic and flat in the front. It almost looks like a dustpan is sitting on her head.
I was thinking like Marie Antoinette, that sort of French style.
Maybe a little flatter.
Yeah, it is funny watching Odo try and herd them. It reminds me of the emus.
Oh yeah, from If Wishes Were Horses.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is doing it in exactly the same way. Well, they're all the same to him. They finally get to the infirmary after some delays at the shops, and Bashir treats the plasma burns on the young one. Then they show them to their quarters and replicate some food for them, which Kira has to eat first before they'll try it.
I think he replicated bacon.
No, it wasn't bacon. It was something stalks.
Really? It looked like bacon.
It did look like bacon, but he said, I didn't write it down, but it was some kind of stalk. So I assume it was vegetarian.
So my question here is, how does Sisko know this won't be dangerous for them?
Yeah, we gloss over a lot of stuff like that.
We don't know what their physiology is. We don't know what particular chemicals might react with them in a negative way. I'm picturing Sisko and the crew standing over four dead aliens going, I don't understand why they died. Sodium cyanide is such a tasty condiment to add to food.
Yeah, we do gloss over stuff like that on Star Trek. And I think, if nothing else, we certainly gloss over the existence of viruses that these other life forms could be immune to that you are not immune to. Especially, I guess, in a global pandemic. I'm going to think about stuff like that. But yeah, I thought that too. I'm like, how do we know they can eat that?
Exactly.
The universal translator finally starts to figure out what the woman is saying. And she says her people are the Skria and they need help.
Urgently.
Yeah. Eventually, she gets out that there are 3 million of her people on the other side of the eye, as she calls it, and we must bring them here. I love the wormhole viewed as an eye.
Yeah.
Thought that was cool. But 3 million people is going to be a bit crowded on the station.
I'm wondering where they can fit them all.
Quarks.
And I have to admit, I'd forgotten they'd done a refugee episode.
Yeah. In Ops, we find Hair Woman, because I don't know her name, telling Kira that she's not used to talking to men in these situations, as men are far too emotional for leadership, and they're always fighting amongst themselves. The dudes all look at each other, which is like, yeah, welcome to my world. Get over it.
Is that not a little bit of just classic Star Trek there?
Totally, yeah.
Let's switch this around and see what we can make of it.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny.
I know, it's so radical and everybody's all upset. You know, just do it and own it. I don't know. Whatever. We do learn here that her name is Hanik. She says she's a farmer, but she was the lucky first person to find her way into the Eye. Her people are searching for Cantana, which she describes as the legendary home of the Skreeans from their religious texts. It's a planet of sorrow just beyond the Eye of the Universe where the Skreeans will sow seeds of joy. Sisko has sent some runabouts out to make contact with her people, and he promises to help find them a home. Odo is like, we can only hold 7,000 people in this station, which is a lot, 7,000.
That really is kind of a big station.
Yeah. She says most of their leaders were killed by the Tirogorans. She says her people have worked under their rule for 8 centuries, forced to work as laborers and servants. They were able to escape when the Tirogorans were invaded and conquered by someone who were part of something called the Dominion. Uh-oh. Everyone looks at each other.
Oh, so we're getting another reference to the Dominion here. And
that's two.
That elements of the Dominion are conquering, perhaps?
Yeah. I had to go back and listen to it because she specifically says they were part of something called the Dominion.
Yeah.
Now, I don't actually know what this is. So I just thought it was interesting the way that she said that.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Dominion. It was someone who was part of it.
There's a couple of funny things in this scene. I don't think there's anybody on television who does a concerned face quite like Colm Meaney does. He is the embodiment of a furrowed brow.
His Dominion concerned face?
Yes. The other thing is, I mean, I barely get to say this, but it's the matriarchy.
Oh, jeez. That's funny. But actually, we don't know that. All we know is that the leaders are female.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't say that the men are weak or inferior. She just says they fight amongst themselves. They get distracted.
Okay.
I'll allow it. Well, this is your episode to edit, so.
Thank you, Your Eminence.
It's the matriarchy here, too, on this podcast.
Okay, carry on.
So Kira stops by the hair woman's quarters and finds her asleep with her males, which I have in double quotes, her males. They don't seem to have the concept of husband or wife, but she says the males are very useful. Kira gets on to business saying they found some of their ships and they would like the hair woman to greet them. She protests saying she's just a farmer, not a leader, but Kira talks her into it. She also gives her a gift of a dress that they saw earlier in a shop when they couldn't yet understand what each other was saying. But it turns out that the woman thought it was awful, and they have a good laugh over how ugly it is. So we have a little bonding moment. It's cute.
I liked it when she explained to Kira that I said it was the most hideous thing I'd ever seen.
That was funny.
I remember that from originally watching the show back in the day. It was a very funny Star Trek kind of moment.
Yep. Well, now we go to the promenade, and we see the hat guys, the ones with the manhole covers on their heads.
Oh, those are some great alien hats. That's another one to add to the cosplay list.
I believe these aliens are called the Tall, T-A-A-L.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't recognize them without their crazy headgear. It took me a while to find them again on Memory Alpha.
Yeah.
Because they do have images of them without the hat. It's very confusing because the hat's the whole thing.
Oh, the hat's what makes them.
Exactly. They don't have the hat on. They're not interesting.
Yeah.
So here we also see Nog and Jake chatting in their usual spot, something we haven't seen for a while.
What the hell is Nog wearing?
I don't know. It was pretty bad. It was very bright. That's what I'll say about it. They're discussing one of the Dabo women. I decided I'm not going to call them Dabo girls anymore. But Jake seems to have a crush on one of them, and she's into entomology.
She's studying it, in fact.
Yes, and Jake has to explain to Nog that it's bugs, and he says, oh, she wants to be a chef.
That fits for Ferengi.
It was great.
They do like a nice crunchy bug.
That was good. They do. We've seen it many times. But with these guys, it's like the usual nonsense conversation, right? There's no value in this conversation.
Yeah.
But they see one of the new aliens cleaning up leftover food off people's plates in the Replimat. Jake looks really young here. It looked like we went back in time. I wonder if they filmed these out of order.
Yeah, typically, you know, they cut and paste when things get actually released. So it could have been an episode filmed earlier than the previous ones.
That's true. So some more Skreeans have arrived and the hair woman greets them. Though to be fair, all the women now who are coming on board seem to have the same peculiar hairstyle. So the station is now bustling with all of these folks. It seems we took them in very easily. What if this was an invasion? I mean, we bought their story with no trouble. Odo's freaking out about how overcrowded it is, which I totally understand. But Sisko is so excited. He says he's excited to see them experience their first taste of freedom.
It is very much the Federation approach, though.
True. Yeah.
They do go towards this believing the best in people.
That's true.
And Star Trek does tend to be very positive, even with the other races and these other people that they encounter. It tries to see the best in things.
Right. The gosh, you're an upbeat lady.
Thank you.
There's a movie reference for you.
Yes.
Well, after the ad break, Odo drags Nog into security because he sprayed one of the screen boys named Tumok with a smelly vapor as a practical joke.
And I do like how Odo drags Nog away by the ear. That seemed very appropriate.
Yes.
And painful.
Everybody knows where it hurts on the Ferengi.
In their wallets.
Good one. Did you know Tumok is played by the son of Walter Koenig?
Oh, that's funny.
Yes. It's also funny because he's called a boy in this episode, and we're supposed to think he's very young. He was actually born in 1968, so he is not very young.
Oh my gosh, he's like, early 30s.
Yeah, exactly. So it's funny. It's a couple of times now where we've tried to pass off someone who was in their late 20s or early 30s as a child.
Yeah. Well, we could say these aliens are particularly long-lived.
Maybe.
So they don't reach maturity, say, until they're in their 60s, because they have maybe a 180-year lifespan.
Right. And maybe the boys are maturing slowly on this planet.
Yeah, exactly. So you do think they'd need to work on crowd control a bit more.
Yes.
I'm just thinking about all these people that they're on the station and poor Odo with a limited number of security people.
Right. So Quark comes into the security office to claim Nog, even though Odo had asked for his father to come. But Quark says, Rom is busy, and don't worry, I'll punish him.
Well, I think the punishment might work, because, I mean, if you remember, Nog started off turning over stores on the promenade.
Now
he's just spraying people with foul-smelling liquid. So
that's true.
His antisocial behavior is improving, at least.
He's come down. So after Nog leaves, Quark tells Odo that the Skreeans are annoying. They don't buy anything, and they're flaking, meaning their skin is flaking and leaving disgusting bits everywhere, which is gross. Odo has no sympathy for Quark's plight. I do like it when Quark is disgusted by something. It must be pretty bad for him to be grossed out by it.
Yeah. And also so Ferengi that they weigh the value of a species by how profitable they are.
Or how much they spend money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these people basically sound like poor farmers.
Yes, for sure. We go back to Quark's and Varani is playing another song. And I swear it's just a more upbeat version of the same song that he was playing earlier. But I'm not musical, so I could be wrong. But I swear that was the same song.
The bar is also full of Skreeans, I notice.
Full of Skreeans, yes. Probably flaking everywhere.
Ugh.
There's a table of Skreean women sitting together, including the hair woman, Hanik.
It's the matriarchy.
They think that since she discovered the eye, she should be the one to lead them the rest of the way. She's dubious, but when the rest of them leave, Kira sits down with her, and she introduces Varani to Hanik, and he gives her a little holographic display of himself playing a concert. It was kind of like a cross between the video of Princess Leia in Star Wars and an iPod.
So basically, he gave her one of his CDs.
He did. Then we go to the promenade, and the kids get into a scrape with the Skreean boys attacking Nog. Quark comes to the rescue, and there's a lot of hissing and arguing that goes on.
I did like Nog's hissing.
Yeah, he was very timid, and all he did was hide behind Quark and hiss.
It is kind of rich, though, the Ferengi criticizing the behavior of any other race.
That is true, but they do not like this race, probably because, well, I guess, A, they're not giving them any money. That is one part of it. But also, they're not showing any interest in the Ferengi or anything that the Ferengi would want to deal in.
And I would also imagine being from farming stock, they're probably not into luxuries or easy to con with. They're very down to earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, Sisko and Dax have found a planet called Draylon 2 that would make a good home for the Skreean. They go to Hair Woman's quarters to give her the good news. But somehow, I don't think it's going to be quite as easy as they had expected.
I did like this scene because I like how Sisko, ever the politician, reads the room correctly and defers to Kira to make the announcement.
Yes.
He tailors the message to the audience that it's going to, even though he's the Federation representative.
Yes. He's smart. Well, when they tell her about this new planet, Hair Woman says they already found Kentana. The Planet of Sorrow. It's Bajor.
Kira looks a little shocked at that announcement.
She is shocked, but if you think about the description from their text of it being a planet of sorrow on the other side of the eye, this makes perfect sense that it would be Bajor.
That's true. It has a lot of problems right now, so yeah, okay. I do like this return from the ad break because we get to see a view of ships docked at the station.
Yeah.
And you can see in the background there are dozens and dozens of these Skrean ships.
Well, 3 million people need a lot of ships.
That's true.
Next, we go to Kira walking through the promenade on the way to meet with some of the provisional government's ministers. Drink! So while she's walking through the promenade, Varani joins her and tells Kira that he knows they're going to refuse to accept the Skreans. He says Bajor is in shambles. It's a strange conversation that the musician jumped in to have with Kira as she's walking on her way through the promenade. I didn't quite understand the point of this very brief conversation.
I think it's because he's maybe a cultural touchpoint for Bajor, so he's kind of important right now.
Maybe. I don't know. In Sisko's office, the visiting minister denies the request of the Skreans.
Oh, these two are a little slick, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's not just a minister, it's a Vedic as well.
Yes, and not Vedic Barile, but somebody who looks mysteriously like Vedic Barile.
Oh, did they not renew his contract?
I don't know, in the same robes. His hair was not quite as feathered, but it was very similar.
Yeah.
Bajor cannot absorb 3 million people at this time. There's some debate about it between the hair woman and the minister and the Vedic. But the hair woman says her people are farmers, and they don't need to be taken care of, they just need land. But famine is already prevalent, and they don't feel that they can absorb these people. Hanik reaches out to Kira for help, but she says she just can't help. Sisko keeps pushing Draylon too in this conversation, but for some reason, Hanik is very upset.
Yeah.
They're sure they belong on Bajor.
The Bajoran minister and the Vedic, they do have a lot of very valid points.
Sure.
And I feel Hanik is perhaps underestimating the size of the task ahead of them, because the minister says how that peninsula they want to settle on was farmable before the Cardassians arrived.
Yeah.
So we don't know what happened to it. I mean, maybe it was used for toxic waste. Maybe it's completely polluted. And do the Skreans have experience in reclaiming land, of removing the toxic chemicals?
Right.
I feel there's an aspect of this which could be the best laid plans kind of thing.
It'll
work. We can farm this land. And then 6 months later, you're like, yeah, we're all starving to death.
I mean, you can kind of understand it from both points of view.
Yeah.
Bajor is very busy just trying to take care of themselves and put themselves back together. And they feel like this is a giant group of refugees who's going to need resources that they just don't have. It's hard to argue with that point. And then from the other side, you see people who have been sort of enslaved, I think she says, for 8 centuries.
Oh, yeah.
And they just want to land somewhere and farm and contribute.
Right.
But they haven't been this kind of a part of a society, it sounds like, ever. So it would make sense that they might underestimate it a little bit.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
But at the same time, she makes a point later, which we'll get to, that is valid.
Yeah.
All right, now we go to the line at the Replimat, which is full of Skreans. Jake finds that aggressive Skrean kid, Tumak, and tries to make friends with him. He's a little bit calmer than he was with Nog, calling Nog an idiot, which is pretty funny. But he's not really friendly, and it's clear that he doesn't intend to move to Draylon too. But Jake is so sweet. He tries to play peacemaker and be friends with the kid. He's always so confused when other kids aren't as nice as he is.
Yes. I think Jake should report this upstream, though, that there's already some kind of element within the Skreans that they don't want to go to Draylon 5.
Yeah, I guess he could have told his dad. But I'm not sure. Would his dad have taken that much interest in what this kid had to say? I don't know.
That's true. And as a man, would Hanik have listened to him?
Well, that's right. But he could have told Kira.
Yeah, there you go.
And then Kira could have told her. Although she's currently very angry at Kira, so.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, we go to Hanik's quarters, and Kira drops by. But Hanik is trying to guilt her, which I find to be kind of a rotten thing to do to someone who really is trying to help her.
Oh, yeah. This was really unfair to Kira, I thought.
Yeah. But they feel just such a need to go to Bajor, and it's just like, we made this decision, and then all other ideas are rejected.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit naive.
I feel that's also the religious aspect that they're bringing in here, of they have this spiritual religious need for their text that they have to settle on this world.
Yeah.
So once you start heading down that path, all sorts of things go out the window.
Yeah, there's always trouble when people start interpreting their religious texts.
Yeah.
The woman is not nice to Kira, which is
crappy.
She
is aloof.
But Sisko calls to say that Tumak, remember him, the kid in the fight with Nog and Hanik's son, has taken a ship and is headed to Bajor. How does he get a ship? What?
Oh, these men are just so emotional.
Clearly. We go into an ad break. So after the ad break, we try to call the ship, which has a high energy radiation leak and it is in some danger. They open a channel and ask Hanik to talk to her son. She tells him to turn off his engines, but he doesn't respond.
She was really good in this role. The way she's like pleading with them.
Yes.
It was very convincing. She did a really good job in that scene. I mean, she's been sort of kind of reactionary, I think, in everything she's done.
Yeah.
Whereas in this scene, she really gets to show some emotion and concern.
Yeah, she's quite good. Just like the majority of the guest stars on the show.
Yeah.
Bajoran ships intercept Tumak's ship. Kira tries to talk them out of attacking, but they say they have strict orders to not let them land from someone named General Hazar. So Sisko calls General Hazar, and this is a cranky dude in a lavender uniform who we've not seen before.
I like the way the two of them work together here, in that as soon as Kira hits a point that she's outranked, Sisko immediately steps in to take it up to the next level, being the one with that authority.
Yes, and tries to talk the general into helping.
Yeah, I thought that was a great way of Sisko supporting Kira in this.
Correct, yes. Unfortunately, Tumak's ship fires at the interceptors, and although the general tries to stop it, it's too late. The Bajorans fire back on the stolen ship, and it explodes because of the radiation leak. And
because
everybody's
of the
upset.
Radiation leak? Really?
Yes.
Radiation's flammable, apparently?
High energy radiation, Miles said. I'm sure that means something.
Couldn't they do if it hit a damaged plasma conduit and blew up, but the radiation caught on fire?
They could have said a lot of things differently in this episode.
I'm sorry, anybody who complains about sonar in space needs to go back to some of the other episodes and look at this.
Yeah, right.
Flammable radiation.
A little bit dopey. In a somber scene, the Skrians are piling into their ships to leave. Kira finds Hanik to say goodbye, and she very rationally tells Kira that maybe the Bajorans and the Skrians could have helped each other. Maybe they could have helped end the famine, but she says we'll never know now. 50 years of Cardassia rule have made you all frightened and suspicious. I feel sorry for you. You were right. Bajor is not Kentana. And then she leaves. That did not end well. And that is the end.
That was not a happy ending. Bajor is not Kentana.
But I do feel like she kind of made her point finally here at the end, which is that we could have maybe helped to end these terrible things that are going on. Maybe we could have been a positive thing if we had learned to work together. Instead of looking at us like a burden, look at us as somebody who could help you to thrive and improve. I think it's very tough when you're on the other end of that to see it that way.
Right. Especially with everything that's happened to the Bajorans in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. This is probably the point she could have made to the minister instead of just to Kira here at the end. Although I guess we should look at it like she wasn't really a leader.
Yeah.
She was a fish out of water in this particular situation, and maybe she didn't make her plea to the right people.
And she'd very specifically said earlier that their leaders had been killed.
Yes. I think she said many of them or most of them.
Yeah.
And also she said it would be difficult to find all of the ships. Because they were also spread out. So yeah, there might be still some leaders somewhere else, and she was trying to fill in for them.
Right.
All right, well, we've reached the end of the episode. We went through this episode pretty fast, which I have comments about why later, but let's talk over analysis. What have you got?
Well, this is a tough one for Bajor. For a start, they're still recovering from a brutal and destructive occupation.
Yep.
They have internal conflicts that almost caused a revolution in the last few episodes.
Right.
I mean, they have this Bajoran supremacist movement that they're clearly still dealing with that wants to get other races off the planet.
Yep.
They have all these problems, and I think it would be very difficult for them to accept another race coming in, even if it's a net positive.
Yeah.
With all these issues that are going on.
Well, and also, Cardassia is... somehow, at least parts of it, are trying to find a foothold back in.
Oh yeah, there's still a Cardassian element that wants Bajor back.
So it's actually interesting because if they did have some better versed leaders who were able to speak a little bit more eloquently, they may have had better luck getting onto Bajor rather than this farmer just saying, oh, well, this is our place. And they're like, no.
Right, that might have been able to work.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is, I feel that the writers avoided a really hard issue here. They gave the refugees an out. There's an alternative world. There's no reason you have to go and live on Bajor. It would have been a much more challenging subject and a way of telling the story if they hadn't given them an out.
Yeah, if they just say, get back in your ships and go away.
Yeah, you have to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then the Federation has to deal with it. Or maybe even the Federation doesn't deal with it. They go in an opposite direction.
Yeah.
It felt like they took an easy approach because they didn't want to hit a really hard issue, which I found strange for Star Trek.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess you could look at it like that, or you could also look at it like this episode is more about Bajor's plight, or I guess the story arc is more about Bajor's plight than it is about these refugees' plight, because I'm guessing we never see them again.
Yeah.
But yeah, that actually, some of the other episodes that we've had that have ended with pretty dramatic endings, I am surprised they didn't do something like that here, because they very easily could have. Like if you think about the way Progress ended.
Oh, goodness, yes.
That was tough. And they could have done a very similar thing here, which is, gee, we're sorry, but, you know, off you go. Here's some planets for you to look at. Here's a star chart.
The ones you might be able to live on, we've circled those in green.
Right, exactly.
Good luck, guys.
You're right. It was a weirdly positive ending. I think the point was more about Bajor's unwillingness to be open to possibilities.
Yeah.
Which it's just so hard at this point to blame them. Because they got to believe almost everybody else could be a Cardassian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. You could even look at it in the very negative and say, what would happen if they came onto the planet and then the Cardassians invaded and decided that the flaky skin people were disgusting and needed to be eradicated?
Right.
Ugh. I mean, it's not a great place for the Skreeans either, potentially.
Yes, right.
But I guess part of it is they did have this, what they believed was a spiritual link to Bajor. So that confuses matters.
You know, we haven't seen any other religions on Bajor. I wonder if they have a bit of a fear of another religion coming to the planet.
Oh, that's kind of a good point.
Hmm.
Yeah, we don't really cover the history of the Bajoran religion.
Because we act always like a planet is one thing. Everybody's the same. Everybody eats the same food. Everybody has the same religion. Everybody speaks the same language.
Yeah. Well, I believe because the Bajorans burned all the heretics at the stake several centuries ago.
Oh, great. Great.
I don't know that for certain. I just made that up. I don't think we ever learn that, though.
No. Okay. Any other overanalysis?
No, that pretty much wraps it up for me.
Well, if we go to women in the future.
It's the matriarchy.
Oh my God. We got a little bit more of Kira in this episode. She's struggling to do the mundane parts of her job and she spread herself a bit thin. I think that makes sense that she'd be trying to do too many things. I could see that because she still wants to have this big impact. At the same time, she's got this job that she's supposed to do. And we all probably know from experience that those more mundane parts of your job start to fall away when you have other things that are more interesting.
Plus, she's also really conflicted about the future of Bajor.
She is.
Do you think that she's trying to help in everything on Bajor? That she wants to get involved? She sees everything as something she could help with and try and get involved with, and it's stretching her thin.
Well, I think there's that, and I also think that she's gaining this reputation of being the person to go to.
Oh.
So she's probably getting a lot of people reaching out to her, and she hasn't learned yet to say no or doesn't want to say no for who knows how many reasons. Like, why is she helping the music guy? I mean, come on. Find him a friend who can help him, and you move on to other things. So yeah, you keep saying the matriarchy, but it is interesting, I guess, a little bit that they tried to do that here and say that this is a race of people where the women are in charge and the men are emotional. But it wasn't really that interesting. They didn't do a lot about that. They didn't talk about it that much. They didn't even really show this emotional side.
They did
a little with the kid, though. He's a kid.
No, there's more.
Where did we see it?
We saw a little bit more of that, like at Quark's bar. In some of those sort of tracking shots, we see like the guys arguing or being grumpy or whatever.
Right.
And the women tell them to stop and point them and go away. And one guy, there was like one guy who kept on trying to turn around and she's like pointing, telling him, no, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we sort of saw hints at that, but they didn't. You're right. It wasn't
part of the story.
Yeah. It was incidentals in the background that if you were looking for it, you could see it.
Yeah. I almost feel like this is just a thing that they used in this story, I don't know, it didn't have a lot of impact.
Yeah, like it could be interesting to expand upon that.
Instead, we got the guys with like rags tied to their heads. It's always hard to know how these aliens that they have rags tied to their head and somehow they have space travel. There's always this sort of weird thing, especially, I guess, on this show, but also because I guess this is the show I've watched most recently. But that just seems so peculiar to me. And it's like, yes, we're farmers, but somehow we can fly these ships and explore space.
Well, I would guess that came from the race that conquered them and was using them, that maybe they stole all those ships from that race.
I guess it's possible. And she clearly knew how to talk to the computers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they had, you know, enough operational understanding. And if they were used for, you know, menial tasks and things like that, they might have enough technical understanding of how to use these things.
Right.
But not how to fix the ships or how they really worked other than the basics.
Yeah. Although if they're exploring their quadrant looking for the eye, they got to at least be keeping track of where they're going so they don't keep looking in the same place.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We don't know how effectively they were doing that.
Right. That's true. Well, that's all I have for women in the future.
That was very short.
Yeah, well,
I think everything was very short with this episode.
I'm going to talk about that in my rating. So let's go on to rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral? What is your rating?
It gets just a thumbs up. It's
really?
Not a terrible episode.
Hmm.
I feel like it missed the impact it could have had. It would have been a solid thumbs up if they made it a little bit of a harder-edged episode.
Yeah, I agree with that. A harder edge at the end would have probably changed my opinion over all of this episode. And you know what else would have changed it? A B story.
Oh.
There was no B story. The main idea of the story here was very interesting, but the episode is quite shallow.
Yeah.
And then there's no real B story. We got all those great B stories in season one. And we had a little bit with Nog and Jake and that kid. And then we had that Varani guy, the music guy. But neither story added up to anything.
That's true.
And didn't add anything to any of the characters. So while there was some really good acting in here and the screens could be interesting, it just wasn't compelling overall.
Yeah.
I found it a real dud. And so I gave it a thumbs down because I just found it disappointing and not interesting. I didn't think it was actively terrible.
Yeah.
But I just thought, what happened? What did I get from that episode?
I looked at it as more of an episode that it didn't really do anything unpleasant. That's why I don't give it a neutral or a bad.
But yet you still give it a thumbs up and not a neutral?
It just gets a thumbs up. You know, maybe you're right. Maybe that is more of a neutral. Maybe I really want to say that.
I talked you into a neutral rating.
Yeah, really, you know.
I wish it was better.
And they could have given it a harsher edge.
Yeah. Yes, it could definitely do with a harsher edge. I mean, imagine how differently we would have felt about this if they had just sent the refugees on their way at the end.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, shortest recording in history.
Yes, I think that is the shortest recording ever. That might say a lot about the episode. I think if you'd even put the full descriptions in, we'd still be looking at, 22 minutes?
Well, I've started to realize that there are a lot of things that are just sort of fluff in the episodes, which is fine because you want things to be kind of cute and interesting and you want some character development and you want to see them working together and whatever, but there just wasn't even much of that in this episode. I'm so surprised there was no B story. The B story could have turned it around, but nothing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up.
Okay.
Okay. So that wraps up episode 10. Come back next week for episode 11, and hopefully it's better. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.